Welcome to 105 The Ticket's video game podcast from Cold Omaha. I'm Tom Schreier. He's Max Hamilton. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to discuss Nintendo Amiibos and the new Hearthstone Black Rock expansion. But first, we're going to start... That was like a hiccup or a burp. I don't know what I did. But first, we're going to start with Eidos Montreal's cryptic messages. When you alerted me to this, and I think you were on this right away, I was kind of creeped out about it. It seemed like a video that probably had content that just seemed internet-worthy, but yeah. Probably not for my eyes.
Well, so they went and announced that they were going to do some sort of three-day reveal over the internet, you know, using like Twitter and I think Twitch was the main streaming source, just to kind of get a bunch of attention gathered to them, and they'd slowly let little details and videos release each day, and yeah. Everyone was trying to guess what the game was going to be. It started with just this image of kind of a steel chair in an empty kind of cell, and it definitely looked like a Deus Ex game. That's yeah. Exactly what everyone was thinking, but it could have been the new Hitman game that they're yeah. Supposedly working on, or they could have like totally gone out
new
of left
series.
Field and but like everyone's fear was that it was going to be some ridiculous like stupid mobile game or online yeah. Game that like just for phones or casual that no one really wanted. And you know what? Turns out it leaked the second day. Game Informer released their new cover, and it's the new Deus Ex game. It's called
Mankind
Divided, and it's going to be a follow-up set 2 years after Human Revolution.
Yep.
And let's start by just talking about Human Revolution, though. Like,
yeah.
That was one of your top games of all time.
It was my top game, and I think probably unexpected. I mean, I don't know how many lists you have with that as the number one game. The biggest problem that I felt with that game was that it came out new, and I played the director's cut. You had turned me onto it kind of late, and it still was dark in the sense that literally like the visuals were dark.
Right.
And
right.
So you expect, obviously, you know, I think of you know, the best games out there, Grand Theft Auto, obviously very vibrant. Any Rockstar game is like that. Obviously, the Assassin's Creeds are usually well done, interesting backgrounds. I like the setting. I thought Detroit was interesting, and then they went to Hengxia, right?
Yep, yeah. And just side note for anyone listening that hasn't played Human Revolution,
yeah.
It came out in 2011. Director's cut, I believe, was 2012 or 13.
Yeah.
But regardless, you've had enough time to play it or stop listening now because there are spoilers
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, so you could probably skip ahead, you know, 10, 15 minutes. I'd say with this one, first of all, the positive with a game like this is it's like Mass Effect or Dragon Age, where you know, the result is determined by decisions you make throughout the game.
Yep.
And I remember you criticized, I got frustrated at the game once and started
shooting
up.
Oh, when you shot up
police. Melon still talks about this, the other guy we live with. But yeah, like, you know, I got frustrated. I started shooting cops, which is never a good idea. You know, I mean, every decision you make, how you treat people, what you say in response to what they have to say, does make, you know, a difference. I'd say it's one of those games you have to play twice. I'd play it through once, kind of with the action sequences.
Right. And it had some really great stealth mechanics and upgradable items
in
your suit, your augmentations and
parachute
weapons.
And stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. And cool, like, spears he has, almost kind of like a Baraka.
Yeah, like sword blades or whatever that came
like,
out of his arms almost.
Like Mortal
yeah.
Kombat, like the Baraka's little things. I don't know. But, I thought it was a really well-done game. It was a good story. We can get to the end, but I think throughout it, I mean, I just, first of all, there was a little twist. Do we want to say the twist, or do we want to, like, leave that just in case?
Well, save that, because I want to tie it into some things they're talking about with the new game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was kind of a game that came out of nowhere. It surprised a lot of people. It sold well. It was good enough to have a director's cut with.
Yeah.
You know, the remastered boss fights and things like that. And the new game plus was great. That was
a
really
great
addition.
Yeah.
It's a direct sequel, and so Jensen does survive regardless of the ending you picked from the last game, and
yeah.
I'm sure it'll be kind of melded together or somehow explained.
I worry it's going to be like Mass Effect, where they kind of threw that
a
together.
Little open-ended,
yeah.
We'll see what happens. Now, unfortunately, like your direct save files aren't going to carry over your choices
yeah.
and things like that, because at the time, they didn't think they'd be able to work on another game. It wasn't all set in stone. The future was uncertain,
yeah.
basically. So it will be a fresh start. But in this story, Jensen is going to be a part of Task Force 29, and it's basically going to be hunting down the Illuminati, and it's a branch of Interpol. And there's an organization called the ARC, or Augmented Rights Coalition, and it's basically these humans with augmentations that are, you know, society's afraid of them, because at the end of the first game, the Illuminati glitched their OGs, people with OGs, and they went crazy, almost like zombies. It did kind of turn into a zombie survival game at the end of it.
Yeah,
and it was
really kind of dark.
Yeah, a lot darker and pretty creepy in parts. But yeah, so now he's hunting this organization, and it's like, you know, are they actually terrorists, or is there more behind it? And obviously there's all these conspiracy Illuminati theories and things like that. But before we get into the game itself, like, what do you think of Jensen returning? Because a lot of people thought maybe a fresh start or a character from the original games.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts on that. First of all, I guess I didn't expect him to survive. Again, I kind of like the ending, and I say the same thing. Mass Effect's one of my favorite series. I love Dragon Age. The problem I had with Dragon Age, and you know this, is that when I got the new one, I thought they did it perfectly. It's a combination of the other two games with good graphics as well as, you know, very expansive world. I'm probably not even 20 hours into it, so I probably still have like 3 years to finish that. But I thought they did a good job with that. The characters are fun. The problem is I really like the choices I made in the first two games, and they didn't transfer over because I went to the new console and because I had trouble with EA because I had an old AOL account that I had deleted years ago. What I do believe, and this is the one knock on Dragon Age, was that no one could, you know, if you're new, you couldn't get into it because there's so much lore and so many things that they don't really explain that they assume you know from, especially the first game, I feel like. And I feel like with Mass Effect, my thought is you got to end the series, like kind of end that storyline with the third game. With the fourth game, bring something new to the table and allow people to kind of re-enter, to enter into the series who haven't, you know, played the first three. This is what I think the positive is with, even though they're bringing back Jensen, who I think they could have probably gone with a different character or maybe it allowed you to just customize your own character. What I like about it, though, with your save files not transferring over, is that it's going to invite new people into this because I feel like although it sold well, it wasn't indie or wasn't culty. Is it fair to call it culty? I don't know.
It definitely did garner kind of a cult following. I think with the re-release and some of the fixes and once a wider audience was made aware of it, it definitely sold a lot better. I mean, they wouldn't have tried to do a re-release, the director's cut if they didn't have that base calling for it.
Although I think they were trying to get new people into it
Were, yes. But I think that our initial cult group kind of made it expand.
I
saw it in a Game Informer article, Human Revolution. I just picked it up on a whim and it turned out to be a great game. It was a nice, and those are the best ones, kind of a game that you just pick up on a whim and it's a really big surprise and great gameplay, a lot of fun stuff. The thing, I guess my take on Jensen is a lot of people complained in the first game. He's like so monotone and, not a lot of personality and stuff. Well, I think it was the opposite of that. Was there was like a lot to lead into or read into, and kind of, you know, he was monotone, but it was like a lot of dry sarcasm and things like that. And I could relate to that. And I just like listening to the conversations and things. He was just like a no nonsense type guy.
Yeah.
So
he related well to the other characters. Like you could tell he was relating with his, you know, the mother of, it was Megan who got captured. Is that right?
Yeah. I think that was the name.
And then what is the guy who's kind of his nemesis who fixed your optical thing?
Pritchard. Yeah.
Pritchard,
and then
they
worked for Seraph. Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, and like I said, the weird thing is, even though he didn't have personality, it almost brought out the personality of his boss, Seraph, who's kind of this old guy, kind of a, I don't want to say crusty, but he was very much kind of like a corporate man.
Yeah.
And then Pritchard was a Pritchard, right? He was just kind of like this preppy kind of.
He was kind of like the reclusive tech geek that he was like smarter than everyone and kind of like was on his case all the time.
Yeah, and Megan's like the brilliance, right?
She's right.
The
yeah. Well, I mean, that. She was the one that was behind, you know, some of that conspiracy and testing on humans and Jensen's DNA and all the things that led to the end of the story, basically.
Yeah.
But, like, speaking of the end of the story...
Yeah, so don't say the twist, but let's talk about the end.
Right, right.
Yeah.
The end, I mean, you had three options where, you know, after all these augmented humans revolted and went crazy because of the glitch in the system that the Illuminati triggered, you know, you could either destroy the whole facility or you could kind of... save them through the technology. And it was almost like the Mass Effect endings where it was like, you know, three very distinct endings, but it, you know, your gameplay choices leading up to that moment didn't affect anything. You had to pick one.
Well, what I'd say is it affects you only outside of the game. Like I think you make the choice you make at the end because of what happens throughout it.
Right.
Yeah.
But the choices, no matter how you play to the end, it's the three same choices, is what my point is. But, either way, you know, the facility ends up destroyed in some of them, and Jensen is presumed dead. But at the start of the trailer for the new game, You kind of see him floating in the water in some sort of helicopter floating above. So I'm assuming that that has to be, you know, like,
again,
oh, they
like,
found his body, revived
him. It's like
him.
Mass Effect.
Right, exactly. Mass Effect 2,
yeah,
right, where they just rebuild him. And so, you know, it'll be cool to see how they tie that in and the immediate aftermath of the first game because, you know, this is 2 years after.
Yeah. And it doesn't bother me that your what you did there doesn't transfer over. And why I say that is because I feel like this game – in some ways, like Dishonored is a very satisfying ending, you know, if you do it the right way.
It is, yeah.
That game, I mean, I'd say the ending's interesting. It's a little different than Dishonored's setup, but what I like about it is your journey along the way, everything you do kind of influences how you play the game, meaning that if you play it twice, you get two different experiences. That, to me at least, was more important than what happens at the end. Having said that, it'd be cool if they kind of incorporate something where the endings are drastically different.
It would be, yeah. And you know what? They did kind of say, it sounds like, in some of their interviews, and I did read the Game Informer article, that they're going to have a much more interactive world and your choices are really going to matter. So that sounds like there would have to be some expansive different endings. And now I'll talk about that twist that we've mentioned. So one of the big things it sounds like is that they're trying to make their side quests definitely optional, optional, but really affect
the main storyline,
the main quest and things like that. So, you know, some of the examples are like, you know, you do a favor for a certain NPC and then they might call upon you in the middle of one of your quests with some more options or maybe some assistance or something like that. Some twists that you're not going to see coming until farther down the road. And the thing that I think of is that in the first game, there's a part of the game where your system's kind of like glitchy and flashing a little bit, and you're not able to use all your equipment for some reason. And then this public announcement comes out, and they're like, oh, you know, go to your nearest limb clinic and get an update.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks that it's a mandatory like part of the game, when in reality, it's an optional side quest. And if you go in, you get this update, and that's what causes everyone to go crazy because the Illuminati are upgrading everyone's systems. Well, it turns out that you can totally skip that part of the game, and then when you go to this boss fight where most people were really weakened and
you don't
shut down.
It's being like Samus if you didn't have Samus.
Right, exactly.
Abilities.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can go in full strength and it's just a cakewalk. So it's kind of cool to see if they're going to have more moments like that because it really kind of reminded me of the BioShock, the original BioShock, and the Would You Kindly moment, which is where you kind of, and again, spoiler alert, if you haven't played BioShock, stop listening, but you've had plenty of time. But it's where one of the main antagonists in BioShock, you find out he was mind controlling every move you've made in the game. By every time you'd get an objective in the game, he would say, would you kindly? And that was supposed to be your mind control trigger. So that it kind of reminded me of the Deus Ex scene.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting just because it's in the first, like, few seconds of the game. That you know, if you play it through the second time, you realize, oh, that's what happened. And it was creative how, like, you know, the one guy, Darrow, I think, is the big billionaire, that you realize he's not using the augmented stuff. He has a cane. And I think, yeah.
Yep.
And I just, I mean, it's a game that there, and I think more and more games, hopefully, will be designed this way where your choice matters, A, and B, it's worth a second playthrough. I felt like BioShock and Infinite was like that. Even though choices don't matter as much, you pick up more stuff on the second playthrough. I'd say Dishonored was like that. I'm trying to think. There's a handful of games out there that definitely are worth another playthrough, and hopefully the length is good where you feel like you can play it twice. Yeah, there's no way I'm going to play Dragon Age another 200 hours.
Right,
I just don't have 400 hours in my life, you know. So by then, I think Xbox 3 will be out or whatever, the next PS7 or something like that. But, you know, I just think if they do this one right, I think hopefully they generate enough interest with the first one and with this kind of wacky, whatever you want to call it, with the cam, that you get kind of your average gamer into this, because I definitely, again, Deus Ex was my favorite game last year. This is over, you know, the Rockstar games that came out and your Assassin's Creeds and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I felt like even though I thought it was well acclaimed, I think there's still an audience to be reached with this game.
Oh, right. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things where they try to probably reach a broader audience by having, you know, those totally action-packed scenes, and you can play it as a shooter or you can play it as a stealth game, kind of like their last Hitman game where, you know, I didn't like it as much because it was too action-y and a shooter for me, but hopefully they find a good balance with the next upcoming Hitman game. But, yeah, speaking of, like, the options and stuff, there's going to be a whole lot of new augmentations, a bunch of new weapons. If you look at some of the gameplay videos out there and the screenshots and things like that, you can see how customizable the guns are. I mean, you can pick different muzzles and laser sights and ammo types and rates of fire, and it's just going to be a game that you can really cater to your play style, which I think is always fun. We had mentioned that the you know, with that twist in the limb clinic and getting shut down and how difficult some of those boss fights could be. The problem with the first game was they actually didn't develop the boss fights in-house. For whatever reason, they exported them to another developer. And they were criticized for being brutally difficult. And not like Dark Souls where, you know, it was a fair challenge. It was just you couldn't beat them. And there was this one where you're in a museum. Do you remember like kind of the body art museum? And you have to go down an elevator and basically you get your butt handed to you by one of the more difficult bosses.
This is the one where your augmentation.
Right. So to beat him, there was a turret on the upper level right before you start the boss fight, and I actually had to keep tinkering with the game, and I carried the turret into the elevator with me before I went down to fight boss fight. And I hacked it and made it basically kill the boss for me because I couldn't do it on my own, and like people had to find ways around the boss fights to get past them.
The funny thing is there was a boss fight, and maybe it wasn't in the original game, but I can't – you're in a warehouse somewhere, and it's a huge dude. Kind of looks like, you know, Duke Nukem.
Right.
And you could actually use the turrets to kill him without ever –
And that was one of the cool things is that, you know, the director's cut came out, and they really wanted players to be able to approach things their own way. And the problem with the boss fights is originally it constrained you. You had to do it a certain way. You had to fight your way through it. Well, you know, if you – were doing a stealth playthrough or a hacking playthrough, you wouldn't have the right, you know, upgrades and progression stuff. It was cool that they did that in the director's cut, and they're definitely developing the bosses in-house again for this sequel, and it's going to be a lot more basically player-friendly in the sense that you have freedom and choice. So.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. We'll get to, at the end of topic three, we'll talk about Games on Horizon, but this has to move to number one for me. Once I saw that the reveal on Game Informer and just kind of the hype on the internet, this is probably number one on my watch list.
I'm excited. And, you know, E3 is around the corner, so we're going to see a lot of game debuts and some game trailers from this. And, I mean, it sounds like the game's far along. It would be awesome if it comes out at the end of 2015. Yeah. It sounds like it's a possibility or early 2016. It's a good year for gaming. A lot of things on the horizon. Any parting thoughts for Deus Ex?
Just again, one of my favorite games. I'm really excited about it. I hope my emphasis here is that it reaches a lot larger audience. It's not going to be ever a Call of Duty type game, but that's something that, you know, like what BioShock Infinite did, where I think most gamers understood that this is one of the best, you know, products out there in general.
Yep. All right. Well, in other news for fans of toy collections in the video game world, Nintendo's line of electronic toys is the Amiibo line. And basically, you use them with the Wii U. It's a lot like Skylanders, Swap Force, Disney Infinity. Basically, these toys where you buy a pack of collectible toys for a game, and you put them on some sort of connector or a platform or whatever the respective system is, and it will unlock DLC in the game for you to use. So basically, you know, you get a cool little action figure with the DLC you're purchasing. It's great with kids. Like, adults are collecting them. It's been really popular. The problem with Nintendo, though, is that, you know, it's this great family-friendly seemingly company, but they have all these really unfriendly practices. And basically what the problem with the latest wave of Amiibos, I believe it's the fourth wave that was just released, they had a bunch of exclusive ones, and I know in the past it was the Marth ones that were a problem. I think in this one it's the Ness one, but basically they were only sold at a certain location for a certain amount of time. It was either a brick and mortar store or online, but it sold out right away, and then that was it. They had no announcements about more coming. And all it did was enrage their U.S. fans. And in Japan, there's a surplus of them, and, you know, it's just getting overcharged for U.S. buyers. And it's kind of like, you know, where does Nintendo go from here to fix that supply problem?
Yeah, there always seems to be this where, and I think we've talked this before, the system that actually develops its best games are Nintendo, it seems like. But for me, at least, it seems like I just want them to be a little more user-friendly. It's easy to turn on an Xbox. It's easy to turn on a PlayStation and play. It's not designed for you to – there's not a learning curve there. with with when you have a screen in your controller and just kind of there's little complications going back to kind of the Wii days. I don't remember with GameCube as much, but there's just little things that are kind of annoying that make it hard to just sit down and play. And this is just kind of throws the fuel on the fire. You just get upset when, hey, look, it'd be cool. Yoshi is my favorite character from Nintendo. It'd be cool to have a little statue or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I'm not going to go pay some Japanese dude $1,000 for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's just
but,
ridiculous.
I mean, they're making so much money on just kind of the collector fan base because, you know, you buy something, you're like, oh, I need the next one or I need the rest of them or I need this set or that set. And then you just, you know, you keep collecting and compiling them. Whether you're using the lock content on the actual discs or not, but you know, it's just too bad that they're not recognizing their audience in the U.S. and you know the sales that could be there and what it could be for.
They're smart to merchandise. They're not merchandising well. I mean, that
right.
just is
right.
what it seems like. Yeah,
but it's odd because you know they're merchandising well in Japan, but not overseas. So you wonder if it's intentional or if they really just can't read the demographics in the audience.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're misinterpreting. I go back to the N64 games. That was the system to have. I feel
right.
like they executed it well. Actually, Ben and I talked about this on the last podcast, that I always say that's kind of what you strive for if you're designing a system and designing games. They kind of got away with that with GameCube, and then it kind of really got off the rails with Wii. But I think that just because maybe there's not as many players in the U.S., there's still a fan base to be had, and really they should be using these amiibos, I think, to drive people to their games. But again, if the system's complicated, if the amiibos are expensive, and if they're underestimating how many fans they have here in the U.S., I mean, all that is just going to – people are going to say, this is way too complicated, this is way too expensive, let's just go get a PS4
right.
and Xbox One.
And for me, I mean, like I said, it's a cool idea. It's obviously working, but for me it's just – it's another thing to collect or spend money on, and I've got
yeah.
enough of that.
But you want a game if you're spending money.
Right, exactly. And you know what? You buy the base game and you keep buying these DLC add-ons. And, you know, some of it in my mind works better than others. Like the Skylander stuff, I wish they'd make another Spyro game because I love that on the original PlayStation.
Those were fun. Yeah.
Yeah, the original three. I mean, Elijah Wood even did the Spyro voice. I love that series. But Skylanders, I don't really get. The Disney Infinity thing is pretty cool because, you know, all these Disney properties like Marvel now and Star Wars are going to be included in it, and you basically get these toys and then you can unlock them in the sandbox game world and create all your own content. So it's really cool. Some of the additions have been met with more praise than others, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the big announcement, you know, so here Nintendo is failing to meet the demand, and you now have Lego entering the competition. There's been Lego game
yeah.
after Lego game. They're very successful, a lot of fun, like all ages play them. They're now actually going to create Lego figures that you can collect and use the same way you do
Which
with
smart.
The Disney Infinity
yeah.
toys, the Amiibos, the Skylander stuff, and they're going to take a big chunk of that market, I think.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that's – I understand why if you're Disney or Nintendo, what advantage do you have over Xbox? It's just – I don't think people are collecting Master Chief action figures, right? And it's
right.
people like
I mean, you know, there's an audience for everything, but it's not like that's the big driving
yeah.
point behind the
yeah.
games.
I mean, like I said, I like Deus Ex. I don't think I'm going to go buy merchandise from it. But I think, you know, it's a kid-based thing. And then it's also, I think people just like having that stuff in their room as a talking point. You know,
yeah.
you come to their house and you say, oh, you're, you know, you like Yoshi. You know, I remember playing Super Mario, stuff like that. So I think it's smart. It just has to be executed better. And the joy of N64 was you could be 3 or you could be, you know, 30 or whatever. And everyone found a game for themselves and had a reason to purchase that system. And it just seems like it's becoming more and more divided where, you know, your Xbox is basically hitting the 18 to 35 demographic, your Xbox and PlayStation 4, and Nintendo's getting younger and younger.
Right.
And Nintendo really has that power to be the system that you have to have at any age if they really merchandise it well, and also just I think made it easier to play. They don't have it as complicated. That's my opinion.
Well, it's definitely a company too to keep your eyes on because obviously they've just released another brand new 3DS that's going to have exclusives, and you need the latest system to play some of these new releases.
And it doesn't have a charger.
It's unfortunate, but you know, they just make these weird decision calls with their hardware. You know, they made an announcement of a possible new console being developed. Hopefully we see something at E3. The Wii U's only been out for a little while. They got involved with DNA, and that's spelled before about how they're going to enter the mobile space now.
Which is smart.
It is smart. It's going to be – they have to do it right, though, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it is a great idea for – like, I'd play Mario all day long on my iPhone, you know? So it's just, it's a matter of execution, you know, so keep your eyes on Nintendo, see what happens with E3 and all these out.
I think I told Ben this on the last podcast, but I think the way to go is actually to have a simpler controller, a simple system that's turn on and play, and that you actually, you know, kind of how Microsoft has the Microsoft Glass, and PlayStation probably has something similar, but you actually use, instead of having a screen on your controller, you probably use your own, you know, iPhone or Android to, as kind of that next screen.
Yeah.
I think just simplify it. I think the nice thing about N64, it was this simple. You threw in a cartridge, you flipped it on, everyone could play Super Smash Bros. You know, everyone could play Mario Kart, stuff like that. Bring back Mario Golf and Mario Tennis. Those are two great ones. And then what I did like what they did in the Wii era is that those new Super Mario Bros. Were the classic platformers. I think those are actually very well done, and those are fun because you can have other people join and play with you. So there's a lot of positive with Nintendo, but I think if you're Nintendo, Disney, kind of anything that has established characters that are kind of timeless, you could be, you know, 95 or 5 years old and enjoy these characters. You have to make it user friendly. You have to make it, you know, easy to use, not expensive. You know, don't complicate things. You know, keep it simple.
Well, speaking of user friendly and keeping things simple, transitioning to our next game,
nice segue there.
Hearthstone is just releasing this week, or it was last, I suppose. Now, a new expansion pack called Blackrock, and I jumped on this game from the get-go as soon as it was available on PC. I know, yeah. I got hooked right away. I would play it around the clock. It was super addicting, still is. So what it is it's a collectible card game produced or created, developed by Blizzard. And it kind of it uses like characters from the World of Warcraft world, and those are how like the card characters and attacks and basically the whole realm and the boards, it's all based on that kind of stuff.
Again, kind of merchandising. But,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, it's cool because you don't have to play World of Warcraft. I never have. I know nothing about it, but you can pick up this game super easy. And what they did was it's a very basic game, easy to master, but it's easy to learn, but very difficult and complicated to master because,
like,
you know,
a good
there's
fighting game,
right. So, there's all these, you know, in a fighting game, you have all these moves to master and learn and different characters and how they approach different fights. In this game, you have all these different cards. You have 9 main, basically heroes, and you pick one of them, and each one has a special ability, and then you can have 30 cards in your deck. But there's, you know, just an infinite amount of combinations of what you want your deck to play like. It's a little based on luck, obviously, how you draw your cards, but, you know, a skilled player is going to know how to build a deck where it won't matter what he gets, he can use it.
And this is online competition.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, and it's all about, like, speed and fun. So, like, an average game might last 5 minutes tops, maybe 10 if it's a slow game and there's timers and stuff, so you can't just sit on there. But so basically, like, how it works is each person has 30 life points, and you put monsters on the field, and you have to kill each other's monsters to hit the life points sometimes. But basically, the goal is to use spells and monsters to get that 30-0 as fast as you can before the other player kills you.
Yeah.
You know, and this is taking off. There's world championships and tournaments and a lot of collectibles, and you can spend money in it to get cards. Or what's really great is you can, through challenges and winning matches, you can earn gold, in-game gold, and you can use that to unlock everything in the game. And that's actually what this new release was.
Yeah.
You can get card packs. Before, there was something called the Curse of Naraxmus, where it was a single-player campaign in the card game. So it had, like, 5 different wings, and you'd fight your way through and try to earn more cards and beat some bosses. And then they had an expansion with new cards, and this is now a third expansion called Blackrock, where there's 5 more wings to fight your way through, like, different bosses and things like that, a lot of new cards. And they added kind of, like, mechanized robot cards. So it's really changed the playing field, a lot of new basically techniques and strategies to master an encounter, and it's added a whole lot of life to the game. Have you tried it yet?
No, I should check it out. I mean, I do like your basic cards games.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it sounds interesting. I think it's one of those things probably you get hooked. Like, it definitely probably is.
And
like,
I think what's going to kill it for them is they're bringing it to iPhone in the very near future. It was supposed to have been released already, but they ran into some snags. It's on iPad and Nook and things like that, the Android store. But, yeah, once it releases for the actual iPhones and, you know, HTC and Windows, it's going to be a big hit. I think a lot of people are going to pick it up.
I could see that. I mean, we have friends who love Clash of Clans.
Yes.
Any game like that, I mean, I think where you can just bust out your phone for 30 minutes and do something, you know what I mean? I think that stuff works.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect game to play at your desk at work, not that I'd do that, or, you know, on the bus commuting, things like that. And I think it's $25 if you want to unlock all five wings. Otherwise, you can just spend a few bucks every week as they launch and buy some cards and just give it a try. I highly recommend it. It's free, and it's a very, very fun time well spent.
Yeah, moving from a game that has a hardcore fan base to probably Black Ops. I mean, we talk about Call of Duty a lot on this show, and
yes,
you know where I stand with this, but probably one of the most, it joins Halo and games like that, Grand Theft Auto, that people just kind of know, even if you've never picked up a controller before or don't own a system. I like Black Ops. I loved Modern Warfare. I kind of got sick of Call of Duty in the sense that I felt like they were cranking out a game every year. Maybe it's just not being in college, not being in high school where you have that time to play with each other. And maybe it's just I felt like it was getting increasingly more violent and it was becoming more and more difficult to just jump in and play. You really had to have optimized guns and understand the maps.
Right.
So, I mean, there's positive negatives with both or all that stuff. But I felt like the single player campaign was slacking and I felt like it was just kind of manufactured. I am kind of excited about Black Ops 3, though, because I did like
Black Ops. I got really into Advanced Warfare. I skipped Ghosts, but this latest one, I'm loving it. The multiplayer is hitting all the right notes. And now that they've entered a three-year development cycle for each of the developers.
Smart.
Yeah, so basically, like, you know, Treyarch is making this next game. And so they've been working on it the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Sledgehammer made Advanced Warfare.
Yeah.
So you have, and I believe, was it Infinity Ward?
Yeah,
they did Ghosts, which, you know, it was a poorly made game. It just wasn't as good as the others, basically.
Yeah.
That could maybe be attributed to Frank and Wes and Zampella leaving. But anyways, you know, with Black Ops, I love Black Ops. The very first one, it was a great game. I thought it was super cool with the conspiracy theories. It tied World at War in. It was cool to see characters returning. Black Ops 2, it wasn't as fun for me. The multiplayer was cool, but it just it tried a little too hard connecting all the characters.
I didn't get it.
Because
of the reviews. So,
exactly. And a lot of people thought they might do World at War 2 or return to a World War 2 game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's kind of a franchise that was overdone, and now no one's doing it, so it'd be kind of cool to go back to.
Yeah.
So
this was the right
basically,
call,
yeah. So what happened was at the start of this week, Black Ops 2 received an update where there were little like Skype scanner codes in the game. And then if you did that, Snapchat, I mean, if you did that, you'd get a little Call of Duty video on your Snapchat, a 10-second video of some sort of cryptic message. And, you know, if you played the first game and a little bit in the second, there were all these issues with like brainwashing and things like that and mind control.
Yeah.
So it kind of hints at that. It's definitely looking like it's Black Ops 3. We know absolutely nothing about the game right now. So who knows? It could jump back and forth like the first one did with World War II and Vietnam and modern day or the future. So we'll see what happens. But I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think the right thing they did was that three-year cycle, because not only are you not rushing games out, you're running into Assassin's Creed kind of issue.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, Assassin's Creed, we're probably going to be hearing news about Assassin's Creed Victory coming out around, you know, theoretically it's supposed to come out in the fall or the holiday season, but we'll see
and
some of that
2D
at,
ones.
At E3 and see if, you know, they go to a different development cycle.
Yeah, and I just, but I, again, going back to Call of Duty, I think it's cool that you get three different experiences every 3 years. I think that's a smart way to keep it fresh. I think it's a way to keep, in a game that demands a lot of multiplayer, a lot of players to play multiplayer, it keeps a wide base, you know, open, especially when people have games like Grand Theft Auto, like Destiny, you know, stuff like that, Titanfall probably to a lesser extent, but that they're playing. You got to keep it fresh. You got to keep people, you know, engaged in something like that so that all their friends are playing. So I think that's the right call. I think Call of Duty has done that well. Do we want to go to our games on the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of saw some other articles in there in the Game Informer magazine that just came out. And Firewatch has been something on my horizon. You basically play a forest ranger, and you kind of deal with some psychological issues and exploring in the forest and things like that and trying to solve some sort of mysteries or issues about his past. And it sounds like it's an open world kind of just not survival horror, but there are some survival elements and just like a wilderness, really rich environment type exploration.
Kinda,
game.
What's the game called where the guy comes back from war, or maybe you're like in the house? I might be mixing two games actually at once.
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about, where they have the guys in the house and they're all kind of going crazy as they run out of food and I don't remember. But it sounds a little bit like this. It's
you lost me with that one. But yeah, no, it's supposed to be a bit of a psychological thriller, or maybe not a thriller, but at least some sort of it kind of gave me a Gone Home feel, where it's you're playing through a story and there's a rich, deep environment and story to be told, but it's all based on exploration and not a whole lot of action. But another one, Rainbow Six Siege. I'm super excited for that because I love Vegas. Did you play either of those?
I played the first one that it came out for free a while back.
And yeah, for the Xbox releases. Live games. Yeah. Speaking of Xbox Live games, if you haven't downloaded them yet, get your April games in, because there are two free games for each system, right? So Xbox 360 right now has Gears of War Judgment.
Yeah.
And I believe Terraria.
Yeah,
and
I don't know much about that.
It's kind of just like a little, it's an indie game. It looks a little like Minecraft. It's based on building and survival and things like that, crafting. Definitely really difficult. Coming later this month for 360, I think they're doing, what was it?
I don't know. I see Gears Judgment, I see Terraria, and then I know they have Child of Light and Pool Nation.
For the Xbox One. I was hoping they'd actually give us an actual full release title. Like, everyone's waiting for Rise, Son of Rome.
Yeah.
So that would be cool to get on there.
I mean, Rayman Legends was cool.
Yeah, no, that was good. I unfortunately already had it. I have to stop buying games, so I start getting them for free discounted.
I wasn't that keen on it. I mean, I thought the Child of Light is interesting. Do you know, have you played it?
I picked it up in a Humble Bundle, I think, or at least on sale somewhere for cheap. And I did play it. It was made using one of Ubisoft's new art creator development kits or something like that. I gotta read it up on it, but you know, it's a really kind of like pastel looking game. It's like a Japanese RPG almost, where it's turn-based attacking and things like that. And I haven't played a whole lot of it. It's a side scroller. It's kind of geared towards a younger audience. It's not too dark or twisted, but it is a fun game of what I've played of it.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I feel like it's a game that's pretty time-consuming. I'm glad there's a game out there like that. I think it's an interesting art style and probably an interesting story.
Right.
But I think I'll play it through. I don't know how hooked that was.
Well, I mean, basically, I got a big backlog. I'm sure you do as well. Yeah. And, it's all about what games capture your attention. So,
yeah.
I guess just a couple other quick things. Witcher 3, that's on the horizon.
Yeah.
They just announced that there's going to be, the game isn't even out yet, and they announced that there's going to be 30 hours of additional DLC content, and that is crazy. But, it sounds like it's reasonably priced, and they're really smart about it, where the developers are being straightforward and honest. They're like, if you're at all concerned about this game, don't pre-order it, don't buy the DLC in advance, just wait on the season pass and stuff like that. See some reviews, see how quality their product is, and then go from there. And I never did understand why people, if you can get a deal on something, go for it. But like with Assassin's Creed Unity, obviously you saw a lot of people pre-ordering and not liking the game, or buying the season pass in advance and being really disappointed with
it.
It's like wait until at least the first DLC launches before you get a season pass, because you're saving money that way and not rushing into something until you hear about it.
Yeah, so that's going to be my game plan with The Witcher, although I am excited about that one. And Mortal Kombat, same thought process.
Yep.
I'm probably not going to pre-order it just because I want to make sure I don't get nickel and dime with the characters. But it's a Mortal Kombat game, and I like Mortal Kombat. And I think so far they've shown the right things. They have the right characters in there. They've mixed in some new people. I think the stages will be fun. The fatalities will be fun. It's a game, again, you can pick up and play, or you can get into it and really understand how to win on a consistent basis.
Right.
So, I'm excited for that one. The only thing I'm really worried about is, do they release 20 characters and then the next, 20 you have to purchase individually, something
right.
like that. Anything else?
No, nope, that'll be it for me.
I really wish I could figure out what game I was talking about there. I swear it's real.
Well, hey, stay tuned, because next time Tom will explain what the hell he was talking about today.
I will spend an entire week trying to figure out what I was talking about. This has been 105 The Tickets Video Game Podcast. Thanks for listening.